Hello, everyone, and thank you for inviting me to speak today. And solidarity greetings from PLM, the Partido de la Kastang Masa, Philippines. I think there might be some comrades from the Philippines in the room, Zoom room today. If you are, because some of you promised to attend. Magandang gabi po sa inyong lahat. And welcome. I agree with the political analysis of the previous speakers that the central aim of the Pivot to Asia strategy and Washington's foreign policy today is curbing the rising economic weight of China and its rapidly increasing influence in the Asia Pacific in order to regain Washington's strategic balance through a direct competition with China. And this also includes the alliances that China is forming, such as with Russia. But of course, this region has always been an important one for the colonial powers. It's not something that just changed around the time of the Obama administration. There's a long history here, an important one for the colonial powers, and more recently after Second World War, for the United States and the imperialist blocks of the global north, to the colonial wars against China to subjugate the Chinese people and their struggle for liberation, to the imperialist wars against liberation struggles in Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, bases and military treaties, political interventions to set up and prop up dictatorships, and so on. It's a bloody history of intervention in the region. And, of course, more recently, and of course, this was done under the guise of the spread of communism, which threatened imperialist global capitalist interests. But of course, more recently, the new factor, if you like, is the rise of China and its influence globally. And Jacob pointed out, the National Security Strategy paper under the Biden administration makes this very clear. And the National Security Advisor for Biden, Jake Sullivan, asserted that the post-Cold War detente with Beijing is over. It took a Republican to create detente, and of course it takes the liberal Democrats to be the sounders of the war drum. And at the recent Congress of the Chinese Communist Party, President Xi Jinping warned that China faced stormy weather, or that stormy weather was ahead. Rather classic understatement, but this was, you know, threaded right through the speech and the presentations at the CP Congress. And we should also note here that this push, this escalation or militarization, this military escalation in the region takes place at a time when there is a multiple crisis of capitalism. The economic crisis, the social crisis, the political crisis, and of course the major thing that really frames the existential crisis, which is the climate emergency. So it's in this context that this escalation is taking place, where this struggle is taking place, especially led by the United States for the hegemony of the global north today. We call this the triad of aggression, AUKUS. Jacob has outlined it, Quad, but also the neoliberal economic offensive integration continues in IPEF, the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity, with a dozen countries initially joining America's brand new neoliberal project targeting Asian markets for super profits. So, of course, the primary thrust of the strategy is a military one, but the economic integration, the neoliberal offensive to exploit Asian markets, to exploit the markets in the Pacific for their super profits, for the super profits of the big corporations, of the powers of the global north, continues. They will not let go of that either. Of course, the South China Sea dispute is a very important one for our region, for the countries in the region, especially in ASEAN. where China claims sovereignty over the seas, and the estimated 11 billion barrels of untapped oil and 190 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, etc. The area is also a major trade route, and the competing claimants are Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam. Now, in July 2016, the Permanent Court of Arbitration at The Hague issued its ruling on a claim brought against China by the Philippines under the UN Convention of the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, and it ruled in favor of the Philippines on almost every count. And we welcome this. The progressive movement in the Philippines welcomed this as a victory, as a partial victory for the Philippines. The Philippines has renamed the area that it claims as the West Philippine Sea. So the South China Sea, the part that's claimed by Philippines, is now called the West Philippine Sea, and the resolution was sponsored in Congress by the former congressman and PLM candidate for the vice president in the last national elections, Walden Bello. Walden Bello described the ruling, the Hague ruling, as a flawed victory, saying that the Hague verdict is not an undiluted victory for the Philippines, and at least in the short term, it will not unlock the door to peace in the region. And he was absolutely right. Our position is for a two-pronged approach to the dispute around the South China Sea, which is both a military de-escalation and multilateral agreements. Unfortunately, China has taken to using unilateral moves to secure what it sees as a defensive perimeter instead of cooperating with other countries in ASEAN to reach multilateral agreements. We describe this as bullying tactics driven by an aggressive nationalism. China has unilaterally claimed over 90% of the South China Sea with its infamous nine-dash-line map that has no historical or legal basis. And it has moved to grab, for military reasons, maritime formations like Scarborough Shoal and Mischief Reef that are in the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines. There is no excuse for actions like this, which Beijing must stop, and China must engage in negotiations with ASEAN countries that have legal claims in the South China Sea to bring about a peaceful territorial settlement. Stop harassing our fishermen, our own fishing communities of the PLM on the northern sea coast are routinely harassed. Their old fishing boats are routinely harassed by Chinese military vessels. It's just madness. It's just stupidity. And this kind of bullying, this kind of minor aggression, if you like, but it's not for the fishing communities. This has to stop. However, China has to come to the negotiating table and de-escalate this militarization and military buildup. However, we must also bring in the larger picture and view Beijing's actions as stemming from an effort to expand its defense perimeter to protect its industrial heartland in the south and southeastern China from a potential attack from U.S. bases and U.S. ships that are within a striking distance or just a few minutes from the Chinese coast. Of course, the U.S. has leveraged this dispute to its advantage, using this as an opportunity to militarize the region, signing various military agreements, including basing agreements with the claimant countries. The Philippines signed the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement in 2014 with the U.S. in an attempt to secure territorial claims, which in fact increased the U.S. military access to East Asia. And EDCA has made the Philippines sort of a forwarding base for its interventions in the region under EDCA. Contrast the stance taken by Vietnam, a very positive move by the Secretary General of the Vietnamese Communist Party, Nguyen Phu Trong, during his visit to China last year. He reiterated to Beijing that his government would continue its four no's foreign policy approach in the region. That is that Vietnam would not join military alliances, would not side with one country against another, would not give other countries permission to set up military bases or use its territory to carry out military activities against other countries, and not use force or threaten to use force in international relations. Contrast this to the statement of the Philippine ambassador to Washington, who said that the Marcos administration, the new administration, might give the U.S. permission to use its bases in the country in support of Taiwan in the event of hostilities. The Marcos regime has also increased the number of U.S. basing facilities in the Philippines from 5 to 9. It's added 4 new bases. And currently, as we sit here and discuss this, the Philippines is hosting the biggest ever military exercise with the U.S., with 17,000 troops, 12,000 troops from the U.S., 5,000 from the Philippines, and 111 from Australia. We're not quite sure what the Australians are doing there. And this is live ammunition. So in the past, they didn't use live ammunition. We know this from reports on the ground. They're using live ammunition. And it's essentially training the Philippine soldiers how to use the military equipment. And this has been described in the Philippines as the recolonization of the Philippines by the United States. I have now Taiwan. Though the war in Ukraine is a leading geopolitical trouble spot today, the Taiwan Straits and the South China Sea are a close second. Taiwan is increasingly becoming a key piece in the U.S. militarization plans in the region. Washington's aggressive approach to addressing its decline as a hegemonic power is fraught with danger. And Washington's bellicose mood was underlined by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan last year, followed by President Biden's explicit commitment to assist Taiwan militarily. Now, China's strategy for a long time has been, while it considers the Taiwanese sovereignty non-negotiable, its strategy has been to promote cross-strait economic integration. But according to some analysts in the Philippines today, this has now moved to a tactical offensive, if you like, in the last two decades in the region. And the trigger for this from the sort of economic integration towards a more tactical offensive has been Taiwan. And this is primarily in response to how the U.S. has leveraged the unresolved question of Taiwan, especially under the Clinton administration and since then. It's China's response to it, and also secondarily how the capitalist politicians in Taiwan use this dispute for popularity and political gain. And Washington's intervention, especially under Clinton, revealed just how vulnerable to China, how vulnerable the coastal region of East and Southeast China, the industrial heartland, is to U.S. naval firepower. We recognize Taiwan's national sovereignty, but at the same time, we oppose U.S. plans to use the unresolved status of Taiwan to pursue war plans against China. Finally, the U.S. war plans will have a disastrous impact on people, or the U.S.-led war plans will have a disastrous impact on the peoples in the region, a disastrous impact on the climate emergency in the region. We know that the imperialist bloc of the global north are prepared to fight China to the last Filipino standing and have no concern, absolutely no concern, about destroying the ecology in the region and our countries. Our little brown lives, our environment and climate don't matter to them. It never has and it never will. We have absolutely no illusions about this. They will fight to the last person standing in the Southeast Asia and the Asia region. Some of our governments are no better, as I have explained the role of the Marcos regime, which has made it very clear that it is willing to be used as a U.S. proxy in this war. We have to state that. This is the position of the Marcos regime. Building a mass anti-war movement based on regional and international solidarity is key. International solidarity is also absolutely key. And the left has to take the lead on this. We must use every platform, every arena of struggle to do this. In the Philippines, it took a people's power revolution to get rid of the two major U.S. bases in the country, the infamous Clark and Subic bases, which through massive mass movements, which put pressure on the Senate in September 1991, ending almost a century of American military presence in the country. We believe that this is the challenge we face again. a people's power revolution. It took a people's power revolution in the Philippines to get rid of two of the largest U.S. military bases after 100 years of military presence in the Philippines. We believe that this is the challenge we face again. We call it the continuing revolution. In Australia, you have the experience of the anti-Vietnam War movement that won its key demands to pull out troops. It won the main demand to pull out troops. And I think there are a lot of lessons here to be learned as well. Now, I've just got two slides to show, which just puts up all the basic demands that we put forward. And it was adopted by the Southeast Asian Left Conference that was held in November last year.